Welcome to the Butts the Seats podcast, episode number 119.
I kind of wish this was 120 so that we could do a shot, because this was a fucking crazy show.
Crazy show at a crazy time.
Maybe we should just do a shot.
I'm Nick alongside an exasperated Emily.
It's been a week, folks.
Emily, I was going to say how you doing, but...
It's been a week. Great. Thriving.
Well, you know, on top of the escapism of just, you know, watching wrestling, we have some escapism from WCW today, because today we're talking about ECW Heatwave 2000.
Ugh. Let me tell you about escapism, though. So, for those listening, while we're recording, it is the weekend after Election Day in the United States, and it's been a tumultuous years, honestly, but this week has been very rough. So, on Wednesday, after the results were tabulated and announced and everything... We just took the day off of work, and we were just sitting at home to recover from all of it. And I'm like, wrestling. Wrestling will take my mind off of things. So I watched WrestleMania 5.
Yeah.
I actually thought about turning it off. Because I was like, we're just going to skip WrestleMania 5 in the watch through. I'll come back to it another day. Donald Trump is all over WrestleMania 5. So if you're a fan of his and you want to see more of him, there you go.
Related programming note. Yeah. We're pushing back the conspiracy theories episode over on the Patreon for a couple weeks. Just
a little too real.
Yeah, we're going to do Evolution instead. We're pulling a crown jewel. But that's over there, and we're here on the main feed today. Emily, what is it we do here?
Well, usually we take a week-by-week look at the slow but inevitable downfall of WCW through the 90s and early 2000s. But today, we are watching one of the final pay-per-views of ECW.
There's a couple left.
What is one of the final.
Three or four left.
You would think that at this point in their lifespan that they would be dwindling and dying, so we decided to check over and see what ECW's doing during their Heatwave pay-per-view in Los Angeles.
Yeah, the original purpose of doing the ECW shows was both of these companies die within technically like a week of each other.
Oh, really?
ECW stops doing shows, but they don't actually like file the bankruptcy until actually after WCW gets sold. So, technically,
ECW outlives WCW.
Yeah, but they don't do any shows after mid-January. Paul Heyman is on Raw before ECW dies.
Yeah, I remember that. I know that story.
So, it's kind of like you're a mechanic and someone keeps bringing their car in for an oil change, and you're like, okay, let's see what's up with this. And then by the end, it's going to be, oh God, what did you do to your car?
Yeah.
But it's also the element of... At this point, WCW and ECW are jockeying for what's the number two promotion in the U.S., and this is a better show than a lot of the WCW ones.
So, that's the thing, like, significantly better, but people in the narrative talk more about the spectacular downfall that was ECW. I think it's talked about more in a spectacle sort of sense, like, it just disintegrated. You would never know it watching this. The crowd is hot. The product's good. The talent is talented. You would never know this company is about to die.
Yeah, but I mean, they are still hemorrhaging talent. I mean, if you look at this card from last year, like the list of people who are on that one and not on this is pretty insane. I mean, you got Super Crazy, who might come back. I don't know. Dudley Boys, Taz... You would have had Mike Awesome still. You would have Masato Tanaka still kicking around.
Is Mike Awesome a loss?
For ECW, yes. Lance Storm.
We still get like glimpses of the Dudley Boys, though.
Yeah.
But like, even that being said, there are still some big names on this show. Like, we've still got the Sandman. We still got Tommy Dreamer. We still have Rob Van Dam. You know, like, we still have big guys that are big pulls. And honestly, like, no, not to give anything away for the show, there were only two people on this card that I looked at. I was like, why are you here?
All right.
Can you say who?
No, I'm gonna guess as we go through.
Okay.
Well, frankly, my immediate guess is DeBaldi's, because I don't think you remember each of their names.
I don't remember their names, and it wasn't that match. But no, it's Nova and Chris Chetti. Why the fuck are they here?
Oh, they've been around.
I know they're Nova's around. Great. They're not pay-per-view. You're dressed as The Flash, and your name is Nova. Pick a character. You can't be both.
So, Emily, let's get into this show a little bit, considering we've already dabbled a little. show is ECW Heatwave, which is two words. Every time I type it, it was one word, and then I look, I'm like, oh, it's two. Okay.
Oh, is it two words? Well, yeah. I wrote it in one word too. Whatever.
July 16th, 2000, from Los Angeles, California. Their first, and I want to say only time, they've gone to the West Coast.
How often did they travel, period? Because I feel like they were pretty much mainstays in Philadelphia.
They did a lot of their shows there. I mean, they mostly traveled around the Northeast. Sure. Like, they do shows in New York. They do shows in Jersey. It's not that crazy. I mean, a lot of the pay-per-views did venture out. I think, like, Heatwave 98 is in, like, Ohio or some shit. But we're in the Grand Olympic Auditorium, a venue I did not know, but apparently it's a very popular like filming location in LA.
Oh, is it?
Bunch of movies were filmed there, including some scenes from Ready to Rumble.
Huh.
Something tells me it's more of like a boxing kind of like training looking gym than it is.
Maybe.
A big arena kind of thing, but.
Maybe, yeah.
And on the topic of this arena, there was an incident about 2 years later in this arena with somebody who is on this show.
Oh.
So we've talked about this previously. I just didn't realize it was here. Remember a couple ECW pay-per-views ago where New Jack and Vic Grimes have that terrible fall off the thing? And remember how I told you that a couple years later, New Jack tries to throw Vic Grimes unsafely from 40 feet in the air?
Jesus.
It's in this arena.
How is New Jack still alive?
And interestingly enough, it's for a company called XPW, who we will talk about extensively in the main event.
Oh, is that the is that the company? Oh, Lord. How is New Jack alive? In 2024, he's alive, isn't he?
No, he's dead.
When did he die?
A couple years ago. And I think everybody was like...
A couple years ago? How?
Oh, my God.
The man has broken his skull more times than any human should.
I watched...
If he lived through the pandemic, I'll be amazed.
I saw a video of... It's the Honky Tonk Man, New Jack, and somebody else. And they're talking about Chris Benoit. And, like, this probably shortly thereafter. And, like, New Jack is, like, bordering on, like, the voice of reason. But while doing that, he's wearing an O.J. Simpson jersey.
Jesus.
It's like, okay, bud.
Nick, he died in 2021. 2021! He lived through COVID!
So, in attendance today, we have 5,700, and the buy rate is unavailable, because the last couple ECW ones just aren't available anywhere. I think even the numbers we do have for the shows are dubious.
Okay.
But in this show, we open on the beach. It's the Blue Meanie, except he only refers to himself as the Blue Boy.
Yeah, there was like Blue Guy, Blue Boy. Why wouldn't you just say Meanie?
But technically, we just open with Jasmine St. Clair.
I mean, she's gorgeous. Hello, body.
Do you want to get into this?
You're not. Don't be creepy.
I'm not. I pulled up her on Wikipedia. Wikipedia, mind you. And it's like, she's known for her pornographic film, Ugh. World's Biggest Gangbang 2, in which
it's
apparently,
a sequel.
In which they advertised, it's like, oh, it's like 300 people. Apparently it's 30, but only 10 can actually perform. So they're just like going in a circle. It's all smoke and mirrors.
God.
You know, I mean, like nowadays, if they did that, you'd have Ian McKellen on a green screen crying. It's like, this business isn't what it was anymore.
What the fuck?
But yeah, she looks great. But she's just kind of like posing to the point where I was like, it's like a weird union thing where you can pay her less if she has no lines.
I mean, yeah, that is a thing for like acting.
She eventually talks, but it was like, she just like actively was avoiding using words. And I'm like,
this was just a bizarre intro to a pay-per-view though. So like, get past Jasmine because it just gets wild.
The Blue Boy and Jasmine go over to a very normal looking guy and they're like, ah, you're fat.
So do we know who this guy is? Is he anybody?
I didn't recognize it as a member of the roster or anything, so I'd say maybe it's a local wrestler, but maybe not from one company.
Yeah. But like, so Jasmine and Blue Meanie are together? They're a couple?
Yes, they are a shoot couple.
Okay. And they're just like hanging out on the beach, and they like walk up to this guy kind of unprompted. Like, he didn't do anything to make them walk. He's just like laying on the beach. And Blue Meanie walks up to him and is like, "Meh, you can't get my girl because you're fat and I am not." And this guy is
fat asses.
This guy is aggressively average. Like, he is fit. He looks like he, you know, keeps in shape. He's, you know, a guy. Not even an overweight guy, just a guy. "Oh, but you're fat. You can't get my girl. You're fat." What?
Yeah, so he like stands up.
Blue Jasmine can't say shit.
Yeah. I mean, he looks in better shape here.
He does look in better shape, but he's still bigger than this guy.
Jasmine low blows him, and then the Blue Boy pushes him over. They then make out a bunch, and he like they're a couple. He is, his hand is like all over her ass.
Yes. That's why I was happy that they were a couple, because
I mean, she does porn, so she might have more leniency on what to do with fellow performers.
It's not a that's not consent, though. That's not.
If they had talked about it.
If they had talked about it, sure.
We pan over to the sinister minister, James Mitchell. He explains.
I did not know who this man was, and I'm obsessed with him.
We've seen him multiple times.
In this getup, though?
Yeah.
Like, as the devil?
Yes.
With his hair?
That's what he does every time.
I don't think so.
I've definitely also played you the clip of, there's a Lethal Lockdown match in TNA. I want to say it's like 2006 or 7, where he's like, and AJ, if you win the contract, then Abyss's mother goes to prison. It's like, what?
No.
I have to find this for you.
Oh, no.
But yeah, he appears in a lot of early days TNA with Abyss.
Jesus.
But we've seen him in TNA before. I think last time we saw him in like 2023 or 2024, appeared on an NWA show where they just like were doing a bit of a bunch of wrestlers doing cocaine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Have you seen Coke-cane?
Yeah, I know there's a bunch of cane variants, for lack of a better term.
Like, he's Loki.
Yeah. Anyway, the Sinister Minister's on the beach. He explains Meanie sold his soul for Jasmine St. Clair. I'm like, all right, lore building. I like it.
Lore building and wrestling. I just love that there was a pan to devil on the beach.
Yeah. He hypes up the show and references like a good handful of riots in regards to LA.
Yes. I honestly loved this intro, especially like his portion of it. It went a little long. I loved his portion of it because he kind of also runs through what the show is and what's going to be on the card. He is like our intro package. He is our running down of the card. But he's a fucking devil on the beach in LA. And I loved it.
He hypes up the main event, which is a Stairway to Hell match. He's like, oh, I don't care who wins, but they'll both be up to their necks in hot water. Isn't that right, Mikey? And we pan over, and Mikey Whipwreck is buried up to his neck in the sand with the tide coming in.
What the fuck?
Which I thought, this is like, cool, they've broken up, or we're writing off Mikey Whipwreck. He's on this
show
with James Mitchell. And I'm like, oh, okay.
To me, this read as the talent wanted to go have a nice day at the beach. Oh, shit, we gotta film an intro. Quick.
James Mitchell laughs maniacally for a little too long, and then we crossfade to the arena.
I honestly love this. I thought this was great. I didn't necessarily need the Blue Meanie Jasmine stuff. If it was just the devil and then that pan to Mikey Whipwreck, this would have been perfect.
Yeah, he definitely did one of these, one of the last two pay-per-views.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember this kind of an intro.
We then get Joey Styles and Joel Gertner welcoming us to the show.
Joel Gertner was on one in this intro.
Well, well, well.
We don't need to recap all of it because it's fucking vulgar.
Well, it started subdued.
It did.
And then we got to Pussy Licking Demon with vanilla flavored semen.
You don't need to.
I can't make you read it all out this time.
It like starts to make me viscerally uncomfortable when you start getting like that detailed of what
Cyrus the Virus interrupts, and I'm like, this all feels really familiar. Even to people who aren't watching week to week, I'm like, you opened the last like four pay-per-views like this.
Yes.
Cyrus says he had Super Crazy deported and Tajiri stripped of the belt. He also says he took ECW's advertising budget and instead promoted Roller Jam.
What is Roller Jam?
It's another show on TNN, which, there's a bit of truth to that is like they are very much using ECW as a lead in to Roller Jam, and it's like their big, oh, we're gonna push this and not advertise ECW.
Why?
I don't know.
The fuck is Roller Jam?
Get used to them shitting on TNN on this fucking show.
They do it a lot.
I don't know if a match goes by where they don't. Gertner makes a George Michael gay joke, and the two trade verbal barbs. Lots of homophobic slurs being thrown around here.
So many. And they just say them straight up, too. Like,
well, yeah, it's 2000.
Still, I feel like the F slur was never, like, cool. I don't know. The R slur had its time where it was just, like, part of, you know, cultural vernacular, for lack of a better term. But I don't feel like the F slur did it?
Heard it a lot on Xbox Live when
that's
I was growing
different.
Up.
That's different. That's a different world.
Gertner says he's tired of this, and is this being TNN, not the gay slurs.
we'll keep going with those.
He's going to leave. He says he doesn't need Cyrus's bullshit and hates TNN, so I'm gone.
And that's the end of Joel Gertner for the show.
Well, Cyrus mocks Gertner, so Gertner attacks him, and then security breaks it up.
And then that's the end of Joel Gertner for the show.
Yes, he's like, I want Gertner taken to jail.
Sure. I'm sure that's where he is right now.
We then get Big Sal Graziano just like coming to the ring and pushing security around for reasons.
And he is big.
Yes.
Big Sal lives up to the name.
They advertise him as being up over 600 pounds, and I think I believe it.
I don't know. He's massive.
But Emily, who is with him?
Tony Mameluke.
Yes.
Is this Tony Marinara?
Yes. Again, I think these two were together last show, too.
I can never remember when we lost Tony Marinara.
It's been a little while.
Ugh. What a star. We were just talking about him in our bitsies. That's why he was like fresh in the mind.
But Sal is pushing people around until we get Balls Mahoney's music hitting.
Balls, 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 balls.
Balls takes out Tony with one punch. Sal eggs Balls to hit him with a chair and then spits in his face.
Sal eggs Balls is such a sentence.
Balls hits his balls punches, but Sal is still on his feet.
How many times do we say balls?
Low blow at a chair-breaking headshot to Sal. Sal hits a chokeslam to Balls, and he goes up to the bottom rope and then just steps off for an elbow drop. I don't really get what that was for. Sal then hits a belly-to-belly and pins Balls Mahoney.
So this was a match? A weirdly flat ending to a pseudo-match, to the point where I thought that Balls Mahoney might have actually been injured. It just, it ended so abruptly almost.
Yeah, but I mean, they were saying it was an impromptu match, so it's not like they were like building this, so.
No, but I was like even watching him as Balls was walking out, like, are you injured or are you just like acting? And I think it was the latter, but.
I mean, it is just, also it possible so that Sal isn't a super safe worker. And, valid. You know, it's a big man doing moves to you.
Yeah.
It made Sal look like a killer, but this just felt like a TV segment, especially it with it randomly flowing from the Cyrus and Joel Gertner. And
yeah. It's one way to get the show started.
And I guess before we move on, we should note that the team of Joey Styles, Cyrus, and an eventual guest, they are awful tonight.
Yes.
They need to coexist a little better in kayfabe because all they do is argue with each other.
Yeah, and I have this problem with anybody who teams up with Joey Styles, honestly, because, like, all it is just bickering. Joey Styles is annoying as a commentator. I've never been a big fan of his in ECW, but anytime anybody joins him, what talent he has in calling the matches is just gone because he has to, you know, banter with the other person.
I remember when we did Heatwave 98, Shane Douglas was pretty good with him, but
I don't remember it. I remember him on commentary. I guess I don't remember it being offensive. I don't know. Immemorable is better than memorably bad.
Well, Emily, both of us gave him MVP, so.
Oh, shit.
I guess Shane Douglas did well with that.
I guess he was good.
But again, we gave it to Shane Douglas, not Joey Styles.
Yeah.
Although that said, actually, you gave Joey Styles MVP for Barely Legal in 97.
Yeah, you know.
But neither one of those are with Cyrus.
Exactly. I think it's different. I bet Joey Styles was on his own for Barely Legal.
Yes, minus Tommy Dreamer coming at the end and not fucking saying anything.
Okay, so my theory does stand that he's better when he's alone.
In short, they are very bad throughout the whole show. To the point where I did not even make note of their random bullshit.
There's a couple of lines that I noted here and there, and I'll sprinkle them in as we get to them. But yeah, for the most part, it's not good.
Let's go backstage. Bill Alfonso whistles alongside Rob Van Dam. They talk about his match with Scotty Anton tonight, and Rob Van Dam says he's going to hit him with a Van Terminator for the first time tonight.
Yeah, they don't say what the Van Terminator is, but that's going to be the big move.
Yeah, they like just really hype it up, and he's the whole fucking show.
Of course he is.
We didn't just go hard to a clip, which is just a weird production thing throughout this whole show. I guess notably, I watched an original file. You watched the Peacock version. So I got all the fun music, but yeah,
I think that's probably the only difference.
Yeah. But yeah, we just like hard go to a clip, no introduction. Like a lot of the audio and a lot of the AV stuff on this is bad.
It's not visibly bad for the majority of the show, but jumping to these clips is weird because it doesn't give you the like the lower third of what this is until a couple seconds in.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh shit, did we just like, was there a glitch? Are we in the middle of a match now?
Yeah. Like, or for both them, it's like, all right, did something get cut?
Yeah, that too.
Because later on, they mention, like, oh, I gotta take a look at those Jasmine St. Clair photos. I had no segment for that.
Yeah, I didn't get
I
that.
Looked online. I couldn't find anybody talking about a segment for that, so.
But this clip that we jumped to is just a recap of a feud that was on, like, last week's television episode.
Yes, it's Bobby Eaton being taken out by Simon Diamond's group from a few weeks ago. Yeah, Bobby Eaton managed to fight him off for a little bit, but then the numbers game got to him, and apparently Kid Cash loves Bobby Eaton, so
okay,
we have a match. And that match is Simon Diamond Swinger no Johnny, and C.W. Anderson versus Kid Cash, Danny Doring, and Roadkill.
Yes.
The crowd and myself were on the same page of, fuck yeah, Roadkill.
Really? Roadkill is a fun character. I do like him a lot.
I didn't realize that he is in the ECW reboot in 2006.
Oh, is he?
He sticks around for a little bit.
Good.
He doesn't really do much of note, but he's around. He got a paycheck.
Hey, that's good. I'll take that.
Simon and Swinger come out. They say they have a problem, but the solution has arrived. It's C.W. Anderson.
I keep having to remind myself that C.W. Anderson is not Arn Anderson because they call him the Enforcer.
Yeah, they're clear. Dude. Well, it doesn't help that they're going for a Dangerous Alliance thing, which Arn Anderson was in.
And C.W. Anderson doesn't not look like Arn Anderson.
Well, that's the whole thing, that none of the Andersons are actually related.
Which is bonkers.
Yeah. But Louis Dangerously and Elektra come out with Anderson, and he goes, no, get to the back. Like, I'm not with you guys anymore.
We don't see any Paul Heyman on this show.
No. Roadkill gets a nice pop. Cash and Diamond chain wrestle to start. They trade a bunch of hip tosses and arm drags until C.W. Anderson tags in and everyone just kind of brawls for a second. All the heels are sent to the floor and Roadkill teases a dive. Kid Cash hits a diving Hurricane Rana to the floor on Anderson. Then back in the ring, Cash hits a pop-up Hurricane Rana, but is caught with a big T-bone suplex from Anderson. Cash hits a moonsault press on Anderson and Doring gets the hot tag. Doring cleans house, hits some of his signature moves, until Swinger hits the swing thing, which is just like a Russian leg sweep.
The swing thing.
The heels work over Doring as the crowd chants for Roadkill. Anderson hits his big left hand, which they kept putting over. I'm like, okay.
He has a big hand.
Doring hits a rocker dropper and then makes the hot tag to Roadkill.
It is a hot tag.
The crowd is all for it.
Popped like nothing other. We should say that this crowd is incredibly hot throughout this match and the show as a whole. They are so excited.
Roadkill lays everyone out and then hits the dirt road slam at a TKO. Doring dives off of Roadkill to the floor on top of all three heels. Cash does the same but turns his into a big springboard. And then we get Roadkill hitting the top rope dive to the floor.
Hell yeah.
Crowd ate it up.
Hell yeah.
Did we eat? We probably should. In the ring, Doring hits his diving leg drop, but the pin is broken up. Roadkill gets crotched as Simon and Swinger hit a double team inverted DDT to Doring. Simon and Swinger hit a double superplex on a Roadkill, pretty impressive, but Cash breaks up the pin and eats an Anderson spinebuster. Roadkill breaks up that pin with a diving leg drop, then Cash hits Swinger with a double underhook lifting pile driver called the Moneymaker and gets the win.
Woo. Honestly, for the match being as high energy as it was and all these guys being like fairly big guys, this was lengthy.
Yeah.
This was a long, high energy match with a lot of like good flippy almost moves. Like, they were really fun to watch.
Yeah, I feel like this would have been a better opener than the weird Sal and Balls thing.
This essentially was the opener.
But this was a well put together match. I just don't have a lot of love for a lot of the guys in this match.
No, but I don't know that that mattered. I really enjoyed like the match itself, and like I could get a story out of it even though I wasn't watching week to week. I still really enjoyed it regardless of whether or not I knew who these people were.
Push Roadkill.
Yes.
He's got it.
More of that. He gets it. The fact that he wasn't part of the invasion is just criminal.
I think he goes to XPW as well.
Oof.
Like I said, we'll talk about it. I'm probably going to mention them five times, but we'll talk about them in the main event. We then go to a very close-up promo with Rhino. He says he likes putting Sandman's wife in the hospital.
Can we please leave Lori alone?
And I'm going to use a phrase I did not like hearing. Because he gets a little too descriptive of her, quote, stinking gash. And I'm like, okay. Oh.
Yeah.
Sandman then tells Rhino to bring everything he has because it won't matter. He's not giving up this title. I'm like, fucking lighten up, my guy.
Why is Lori...
Lori Sandman. It's fine.
Lori Sandman is ECW's Kimberly. Like, Lori and Sandman are to ECW what Kimberly and DDP are to WCW. Like, one cannot exist without the other. DDP's whole thing in WCW for the longest time is protect my wife. It seems like Sandman's whole thing right now is protect my wife.
I was going to say she's more Elizabeth because things just keep happening to her. And I'm like, stay home.
Honestly, how dare you compare it to Elizabeth? Because what Lori does that Elizabeth doesn't do is fight back. Lori throws hands. Lori fucking tries. Elizabeth is just like, oh, I'm kidnapped. Oh, okay. Bye. No, don't make that comparison.
This is where we get the Jasmine St. Clair mention, but our next match is Steve Corino with Jack Victory versus Jerry Lynn.
Jerry Lynn. That's the only time I do it, I promise.
Lynn starts up tempo, takes out both men. Lynn hits a diving bulldog that sends Carino to the floor. Lynn then hits a diving crossbody onto Victory and Carino. Every note I have for the start of this is, Lynn does this, Lynn does this. Like, it's very one-sided early.
It does start very Lynn-heavy at the very beginning. But there is this whole storyline that we're not really talking about where they're kind of doing like a New Blood versus Millionaires thing, kind of, where it's ECW versus the network, where some guys represent ECW and some guys represent the network, but it's not like a clear divide on who is who.
So I think if you're watching ECW, week to week, it is.
Maybe. But this is one of those ECW versus the network matches as well. So I think it was Steve Carino is the network?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Jerry Lynn turned down the offer to join the network.
Okay. But that's like, that's not just for this match. It's multiple matches going through as well. But the other thing that always makes me giggle is whenever there is a bullshit chant, commentary goes, oh, a fecal chant. They did that in the NFL too. Like Thursday night, there was the Ravens game. Somebody called a bullshit chant. And what did commentary say? They were like a cow manure chant or something like that. Like, oh my God, guys, just say bullshit.
Lynn hits a backbreaker and continues to beat down Carino, including a vaulting leg drop on the apron to the back of Carino's head, which sends him to the floor. Carino drops Lynn on the guardrail, but Lynn grabs Carino for a tornado DDT on the floor. Carino starts bleeding, and Lynn tries to open him up with his finger.
Ugh.
As we hear a sit the fuck down chant.
Oh my God. This gets so messy and gross so quickly.
Lynn hits a 10-punch spot, but Carino grabs him for a powerbomb on a chair that Jack Victory slid into the ring. The heels then methodically beat down Lynn as Carino is just leaking blood.
Leaking blood.
Carino hits a shake, rattle, and roll, and then a little bionic elbow to taunt the dusty crowd. Lynn tries for a sunset flip, but quickly runs into a power slam. Then Steve Carino distracts the ref so Jack Victory can cheat. Even ECW is doing the distract the ref spot better than WCW.
Yes. I mean, they also get it more.
Yeah.
They respect the business more than ECW does, I believe.
Which leads me to my next note. Steve Carino tells a fan that the fan's mom jerked him off last night.
Yeah, there is so much vulgarity in this show, more than I have like ever experienced in another, particularly ECW. It is pretty fucking raunchy tonight. We don't need to note on every single time. We already skipped over like three or four raunchy little bits. But oh my God, they are like, oh, pay-per-view? Cool. Say everything that we've ever wanted to say. Ever. Well,
according to Mark Madden, you could have sex on pay-per-view.
Correct, yeah. And honestly, if ECW heard that, they would try.
In the ring, Carino hits a T-bone suplex and then hits a low blow and calls for the chair, but the chair is kicked into his face by Jerry Lynn. Lynn fires up, hits big right hands. They like momentarily slow down to like make sure that Carino gets vaulted over the top rope. And the crowd is immediately like, what the fuck, boo? It's like, it wasn't even like a botch. It was
no,
just
it
like
wasn't.
A slightly like a hesitation. Just took an extra half second to fully get over the rope. Carino gets crotched and Lynn hits a hanging DDT onto the chair. Jerry Lynn then grabs Steve Carino's head.
Which is covered in blood.
Yes. And uses Carino's blood to do like war paint on his face and then writes die in blood on his stomach.
Tell me why I love this.
Did you?
I kind of did. I thought this was awesome.
I thought it was going to make you feel squishy.
I did feel a little squishy, but when he started doing the war paint, I was like, oh, fuck, this is sick.
I mean, you have had a couple moments recently where you're like, ooh, oh, my God. Was this one of them?
Oh, no. Okay. Oh, I didn't think this was sexy. I just thought this was like, this was crazy. Like, this is ECW. This is so extreme. This is like, I don't know what word I'm trying to say.
Badass.
I guess badass, but I feel like it's more than badass. It's really good. It's exactly what you want it to be.
What's the Twitter meme of like, guys will see this and say, fuck yeah.
Honestly, yeah, it was very fuck yeah. It was like, oh, like that let out something feral inside of me. Like, let's go to war.
Carino hits a super kick and goes up top in like a weird location. I don't know what he was originally planning for, but Lynn turns us into a second rope inverted DDT. Carino hits like a twist of fate neck breaker, apparently called the old school expulsion. Jerry Lynn then knocks powder out of Jack Victory's hands, but this ends up blinding the ref, so Jack Victory just punches the ref out.
Yeah, why?
I don't know.
The man's already blind. Why did we knock him out too?
Jerry Lynn has the visual pin, but obviously the ref is down. Steve Corino then takes off his boot and hits Jerry Lynn with it. Jack Victory then hits Jerry Lynn with a cowbell, but Jerry Lynn kicks out of both. The two trade strikes and pin attempts until Lynn hits a cradle pile driver for the win.
This little, like, near fall combo thing that they kept doing, like the roll pin, roll pin, roll pin. That was actually, while very obviously choreographed, kind of impressive. I liked it.
Thoughts on this whole match?
I fucking loved it.
Yeah?
I thought this was so cool.
I thought this was a good match. I feel like it was almost too fast. I feel like you could have let things breathe a little more.
No, I think it was the perfect length. I think there was the perfect amount of energy. Like, this is exactly what an ECW match should be. A little bit of blood, a little bit of hardcore, a little bit of fuck around, find out, and all sandwiched into like a 6-minute match. Perfect.
This was definitely longer than 6 minutes.
How long was it?
I'm like, this match was 15 minutes.
No way.
Yes.
And you wanted this to breathe? Longer than 15 minutes should never be.
We then go hard to some clips from Hardcore Heaven 2000 of Sandman and Rhino and then Laurie Sandman just dying.
See, I remember this. I remember this clearly.
Like again, they don't throw to this. We just see it.
Yeah, there's no lead in. There's no like, check out what happened to lead into this feud. No. Just clip.
Backstage, Sandman cuts a promo alongside his wife on the anguish that Rhino put his family through.
Beer and cigarette in hand.
Rhino then attacks Sandman from behind and then tries to fucking drown Lori in the toilet of like the dressing room.
So I wasn't sure that he was trying to drown her at first. It looked like Rhino was just giving Lori a swirly. Which is so juvenile if that's what it was actually gonna be.
I don't fucking know, man.
I don't think it was, but it was very funny. It's like, is he swirling her?
Security eventually breaks this up, but holy shit, Rhino, calm the fuck down, my guy.
Yeah, Rhino's feeling too many feelings.
Oh, speaking of fucking feeling too many feelings, Dawn Marie suddenly joins commentary, and Cyrus, I think, only talks about his penis the rest of the show.
Correct. That being said, I did do a Who's That Pokemon, and I did not prompt you for this.
Oh, okay. See, see, my takeaway on her outfit was she's a Grinch hunter.
Sure.
All right.
Hold on. Let's play the music.
Who's That Pokemon?
Okay, Emily. Who you got?
Dawn Marie is wearing a two-piece outfit set where both pieces are fluffy, feathery, bright green. So the Pokemon that she is either Skidoo or Go-Goat.
Okay, I'm going to quickly go with Burmy.
Burmy?
Yes.
I was going for the outfit.
In the plant cloak.
Yeah, I see that for yours. But I was just looking for like the band of grass as opposed to the entirety of a bush.
Well, no, she's just wearing two Burmies.
Oh, sure. Yeah, okay. I can get behind that.
She's wearing the bush over her bush.
Okay. I feel like it's been a minute since I know who's that Pokemon, so I wanted to just like scream it on you. Plus, it takes away from the raunchiness that Dawn Marie brings to the show. So let's talk about Pokemon instead.
Well,
fuck it.
Does she say anything during any match that isn't the main event?
Yeah, she has some like in between stuff.
Yes,
like
but
not
that's
during
the
match.
Stuff.
No.
Yeah, like she's like, she could join commentary. I don't think she. One, I was like, why is she joining before whatever the next match is? Because she's here, and then New Jack's music hits.
Ugh.
Joey Styles notes that he has a broken leg. DeBaldi's then come out to attack him once he gets to the ring.
Their name is not DeBaldi's.
Yes, it is.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I thought they were saying the Baldies.
Well, yeah, but...
Did they get a lower third? I didn't see their title actually being
No,
put on
I
the
just
screen.
Remember this from previous ones. So the Baldies bring New Jack in the ring and use a staple gun on his face.
Please stop hitting his head, too. Like, they just go full-on punches at this man's head and then staple him. Can we stop doing head-based offense, particularly on New Jack?
Nova and Chris Chetty make the save. Each hit dives to the floor on the Baldies. By the way, the Baldies' names are Angel and Tony DeVito.
Sure.
The Baldies hit a double flapjack on Nova for a two count. I guess this is a match now, too?
Sure. But, like, not a New Jack match.
No, he's just gone.
He's out. He's done.
Nova hits a spinning belly-to-belly, and the partners tag in. Chetty hits kicks on both them. Chetty hits a back suplex bomb, but Nova misses a swanton. DeVito hits a Bronx bomb on Chetty, but misses a moonsault. Nova hits two roll-through pile drivers and then rolls through. I think he's going to do a third one, but it turns that into a power bomb. I feel like you're going to take offense to this for whatever reason.
Oh, no.
Nova is to ECW what Canyon is to WCW.
Oh, really?
Yes. Just that fun innovator of offense that doesn't get a lot of...
I don't think of him as a bad wrestler. Yeah. I just think of him as, like, kind of a nothing burger. I don't know that I would have likened him to Canyon, because, like, Canyon at least has, like, fun characterization that comes across on, like, on the mic.
In-ring-wise, his reputation is
okay. Cool,
inventive moves, the same way that Canyon's
okay,
is.
Okay, sure. I'll take that.
Chris Chetty hits the Amityville Horror, and then they hit their stereo dive from the same corner called the Tidal Wave for the win.
Are these two, their whole thing just, hey, we're nerds?
I guess.
Like, come on. The Nova thing will never not bother me.
He's definitely come out in, like, Green Lantern gear before,
too. It also bothered me then. Because Nova, I'm sorry, this is diving into some past lore that is still, unfortunately, in my brain. Nova is also a superhero. Nova is a comic book hero. Yes. He has his own costume. He has his own characterization. Why are you calling yourself Nova, but dressing up as the Green Lantern or as the Flash? Why don't you just call yourself the Flash? Why don't you call yourself the Green Lantern? If you're going to dress up as these people, be called that. If you're going to be called Nova, dress up as Nova.
Because I think Nova is legally distinct enough where he won't get sued.
Probably, because in 2000, nobody knew who Nova was. But come on. If you're going to be a character or from a comic book, like, be the character from the comic book. Get sued. Fuck them.
Yeah, you're already using unlicensed music, so.
Yeah.
In terms of the match, this was, felt kind of
really
pointless.
Underwhelming. This is the one that was like, this did not need to be on a pay-per-view. It wasn't bad, per se. It was just kind of like, bleh.
It felt like this time could have been used better elsewhere.
Sure.
Backstage, we get Tommy Dreamer in a locker room.
Okay. We need to talk about this promo.
So the actual content of this promo, he's like, all right, you know, his humble beginnings. He's like lost his friends and family to this, like, you know, because of this business. And Just Incredible stole his moment and he's going to get his moment back tonight.
Sure.
That is the verbal content of this promo. I don't blame you if you got none of that, because Tommy Dreamer has decided to express his intensity by, you know how Goldberg would do the headbutt the locker? You don't do that with your face.
Or your, like, your palms.
Tommy Dreamer is just smashing his face into this locker to the point where, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but he actually manages to get some color.
Yes, he does. He does bust himself open. But he uses it as, like, a period where he'll say a sentence and then go bash his face and then say a sentence, go bash his face again. And it wasn't just his face. He would, like, hit it with his hands, too. That's what something that Goldberg doesn't do, though. He does hit his, he hits his forehead, albeit multiple times, but not with his hands. Like, he doesn't use his hands to brace himself. It looked almost like he was, like, doing a push-up on the lockers.
I'm just remembering Ken Shamrock talking about getting a chair shot to, like, the face and forehead, and he's like, it's the strongest part of your head. Yeah.
I mean, I guess. But at what cost?
Yeah, this just looked very silly because he's just not doing it with enough intensity.
Like, his voice has the intensity, but his body does not.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
So let's go into our next match. It's a three-way dance.
Well, kind of.
Yeah. It's Little Guido versus a returning Psicosis. Or...
No. Psicosis.
Yes, Joey Styles has a line of, like, that's the Spanish pronunciation and spelling, more or less going, it's legally distinct. You can't sue us.
Don't sue us.
Though apparently Emily wouldn't care.
Psicosis.
And the third member of the match is Yoshihiro Tajiri.
Tajiri! So we have Little Guido. Sorry, you called him Guido. It's the Sicilian shooter, please. Psicosis. Hell yeah.
Well, to be fair, his name is Little Guido, but his nickname is the Sicilian Shooter.
He was announced as the Sicilian Shooter.
Oh.
Yes.
Was it not the Sicilian Shooter, Little Guido?
I mean, commentary called him Little Guido the whole time, but he was announced as the Sicilian Shooter. This is like a dream matchup. Like, these are three hell yeah level performers. I'm fucking psyched.
Before we move on, I just want to note that on the original broadcast, Psicosis comes out to a Smashing Pumpkins song.
What song?
Cherub Rock.
Okay. Weird choice.
Even weirder, I think it might be sucking up to Billy Corgan, because he shows up in ECW TV in the next, like, week or two.
Oh, maybe. Because Psicosis does not seem like the kind of guy to be a Smashing Pumpkins fan.
Yeah.
Not that he's not. He might be.
We then get Mikey Whipwreck coming out during the in-ring introductions.
Why?
And everyone just kind of takes each other out at the start, so I guess this is now a four-way dance.
I mean, but why? Like, do we really need this to be a four-way? I don't... See, I have a problem. I don't really like Mikey Whipwreck as a wrestler. I know he's your boy. You love him. I am like very underwhelmed by him. So him being added to this match, it takes away to me rather than like adds, because I want to see these three. I don't want to see him.
Well, Whipwreck hits a whippersnapper onto Jiri and then a dive to the floor on all three men. Tony Mameluk then comes out to attack Whipwreck.
So now Tony Mameluk's here, which means Big Sal is also here. Yes. Come on now.
I believe they're still with Little Guido. They're the FBI, the full-blooded Italians.
The full-blooded Italians.
Whipwreck dives onto Big Sal at ringside, but is caught, rammed into the ring post. In the ring, Psychosis hits a diving leg drop on Whipwreck, and Little Guido pulls Psychosis off the pin so he's able to get the pin himself. So with that, Mikey Whipwreck is now eliminated, in case you forgot how the four-way dance works.
Yes, I did for a second, and then I remember, like, oh yeah, this is elimination style. Got it. So now we can have the match that we wanted to have. Now Mikey Whipwreck's out of here.
I was sad to see him go, but anytime I don't have to keep saying Whipwreck, I'm fine.
Yeah,
with
it's
that.
Better for both of us.
We get a roundhouse kick to Guido from Tajiri. Tajiri hits a Hurricane Rana and a Tilt-A-Whirl head scissor. Tajiri hits a springboard moonsault press on both men on the floor and then hits another roundhouse kick to Guido on the apron. Tajiri then hits a super kick, and then Psychosis hits a diving corkscrew leg drop, but Guido kicks out.
Did you catch the Lucha Libre chants? The crowd started yelling, Lucha Libre. I've never heard that before, like, obviously for Psychosis, but I've never heard them chant Lucha Libre. Hmm. I love that. I'm just glad that Psychosis is getting the well-deserved love, and Tajiri gets his flowers in this match, too. Like, finally. These men deserve more love than they've gotten.
Little Guido hits an unprettier called the Kiss of Death on Psychosis, but Tajiri just takes his head off again. Tajiri hits a bridging German suplex on Psychosis, getting the pin, so Psychosis has been eliminated.
I mean, I'm just happy that we got to see Psychosis. Even if it was for this little blip of time, I'm happy to see him. I actually did think he was Juventud when he walked out. I was like, did Hoovy leave WCW and I missed it?
Not yet. He hasn't had his drug-filled rage weekend.
Oh, God.
Tajiri slaps and chops Guido in the corner, then tries for a tarantula-like pin on the mat, but Guido keeps kicking out, and then just, like, core strengths up into, like, roll through for a pin.
Ugh.
Tajiri actually locks in the tarantula then, and follows that up with a handspring back elbow. Tajiri grabs a chair and lays it in front of Guido's face in a tree of woe, and then baseball slides into the chair.
So cool.
Guido manages to hit a diving famouser called the Sicilian Slice.
I like that name.
Guido catches Tajiri on a vault in the corner and slams him. Tajiri misses Guido, then hits a brainbuster on the chair for the win.
The green mist. I honestly feel like for a half a second, I forgot that Tajiri also does the green mist.
Yeah.
And then when that hit, I was like, oh, duh, that's what we were waiting for. Done.
I think I missed the first time. Tajiri, like, crawls through under the ring because he goes out on the one side and then emerges on the back side of the ring.
Oh, I love that. We need to utilize under the ring more often. We don't know what's under there. It should be nothing. And Hornswoggle.
And Little People's Court.
Well, I did say Hornswoggle, didn't I?
I fucking love Tajiri, man.
Tajiri is such a treat. This whole match was such a treat.
It could have gone longer.
And it was good, verging on great, and it would have been great without the inclusion of Mikey Whipwreck.
Yeah, my one criticism for this match is both like the actual finish and Psychosis getting eliminated, it just seemed like it happened. I didn't really feel like it built towards it.
Yeah, I agree. This was still such a fun match. Like, I'm not going to dog on this match too much.
That's what I'm saying. Get rid of the Baldies versus the Nerds match. And,
give this one a couple more minutes. Yeah. The Baldies versus the Nerds.
So, as much as I love Tajiri, I do need to note, I went back to do a jock swatch for him for how many times he adjusted his gear, because I noticed it towards the tail end, and I'm like, I need to go back and look.
Nick, what is the grand total of times that Tajiri messed with or adjusted his gear?
In a 10-minute match, it was mostly the, like, belt tassel thing he had going on. He fucked with it 12 times in a 10-minute match.
Big woof.
And that's anytime he was on screen. I can't rule out times he was off screen.
Fair.
Because there were some where, like, you about to, and then it cut away. And I'm like,
You get away with it this time, sir.
So tie that shit off, dude.
Yeah. I didn't notice it once. But when we were, like, texting as we were watching this together, and together but separate, and he was like, oh, I'm at this match, but I got to go back and do a jock swatch. And I was like, I beg your finest pardon. What the fuck did you just say to me? You're like, oh, I got to see how many times he touches his shit. Like, why?
All right, we got three matches left. We go somewhere backstage. I couldn't tell if it was outside or not. It's just incredible and Francine for a promo.
I kept writing this was Beulah. I cannot keep Dawn, Francine, and Beulah separate in my head.
Credible says they're bringing barbed wire to pay-per-view.
Okay. Wrong. Incorrect. Yes. This has been done many a time on pay-per-view. This is the year 2000. I'd like to introduce you to Mick Foley. He had a hell of a run with barbed wire in 1998. Don't say that this is... I think so. That's the barbed wire matches.
It would have been Hell in a Cell. Barbed wire, I'm thinking that's more of like Triple H in the beginning of this year. Also, I'm pretty sure I've seen barbed wire.
Mick Foley does a lot of barbed wire.
Yeah, I mean, not American pay-per-view for the most part. He probably has, and I wouldn't doubt that ECW has done barbed wire.
Yeah, this is just such an outrageously incorrect statement. Like,
we saw Terry Funk and Sandman doing barbed wire stuff.
There you go.
Remember the bob wire?
The bob wire. Tommy, is this just the first time you're doing barbed wire? Maybe. But you're not innovative in bringing barbed wire to pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Go to Japan. Listen, watch their shit. Watch any of WWE's shit from the last couple of years. Like, come on. There's barbed wire everywhere. Barbed wire's not new in the year 2000.
Credible says he doesn't like the barbed wire, but he'll use it if like that's what it takes. He's going to use everything at his disposal to remain ECW champion. Like, all the promos on this show have kind of been eh.
Yeah, I don't really pay a lot of mind to them, honestly.
Let's go to our next match for the ECW television title. It's the Sandman versus Champion Rhino. So I got the authentic Enter Sandman entrance. I'm assuming you got the WWE version.
Sure, but like, even with the dubbed over version, Sandman's entrance is just unmatched. The energy, the vibe. I would love to go back in time and be in an audience for an ECW show and be part of Sandman's entrance.
Did you catch the interaction he had with the first beer guy?
No.
So he goes to the crowd. He finds somebody wearing a Philly Flyers jersey. And he looks at him. And you could see him go, "How old are you?" 23. Pours the beer.
Good. Okay, good. He checked. He asked.
It made me laugh. I'm like, all right, good on you, man.
God, I love Sandman.
So Sandman roams around the whole arena. And like, there's a cool bit where he's in like a dark corner. So he's lit up only by like the flash bulbs.
Ugh. It's just such a good entrance. I'm sure the music adds to it. But even without the music, it's incredible.
He's also cracking the beers with like lines in the music to like wait for the drop.
Yeah, see that I wish that we did have.
Also, somewhere around beer 3 or 4 of the entrance, he busts himself open.
Yes.
Rhino comes to the ring. Sandman cracks him over the head 3 times with a kendo stick to start, but Rhino clotheslines him. Sandman throws Rhino to the floor and slams him into the barricade and then throws a guardrail into the ring.
This is the first time I've seen this, I think. Using the guardrails as weapons, like in-ring weapons.
Yeah, it's not that common. Ringside.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
He did grab one that was a vastly different color from everything else. So,
oh, did he?
I'm wondering, were the guardrails at ringside the arenas, and this is ECW's, that way they could bust it up?
Oh, okay. That would make sense.
Sandman whips Rhino into the guardrail in the ring. This is very clearly not his plan A, because he's trying to lay it sideways on the ropes.
Yes. Kind of like a table, like he would a table.
But because guardrails have the feet, won't lay flat.
No.
They struggle with this a couple times.
Yeah, he really does. He gives it his best go. I mean, he tries to get this set up. Like, it looks like he's trying to prop it up so that he can throw Rhino through it, kind of like how he would a table, but just a little bit more rough. Eventually, he just takes it off of the ropes and just sets it up normally in the ring, and just like, there's now a guardrail in the ring.
Sandman hits a Heineken Rana into the guardrail laying down. That's what they call it.
Really? Yeah. I love that, actually. I thought you were just making that up off the top of your head.
Sandman hits a bulldog onto the guardrail, but is superplexed onto it shortly after. Sandman slams Rhino, then lays the guardrail onto him to hit a Swanton bomb. Jack Victory and a very taped up Steve Corino come out to help Rhino.
Steve Corino is still so fucking bloody, though. They didn't clean him up. They just put some bandages on his head.
We then get little Spike Dudley coming out in a leg brace and cracks Victory with a kendo stick. Then he and Sandman hit a 3D on Steve Corino.
Hell yeah.
They got to work on that. It was not the smoothest.
It was not. But he's little Spike Dudley. He wasn't ever part of the Dudley Boys. He was not invited to the 3Ds.
No, he would take them.
Exactly. He didn't get to do them.
Rhino takes out Spike Dudley and then pile drives him from the apron through a table at ringside. Sandman hits a kendo stick shot and goes for a White Russian leg sweep on the guardrail. But Rhino counters, slamming him down, and then pile drives him on the guardrail for the win. Post-match, Rhino pours beer on himself and kind of throws the beer towards ringside. That may come up in a little bit.
Oh, do you think that's like an inciting incident?
A little bit.
Interesting.
It's not intentional, but...
Interesting. What did you think of this match overall?
I thought this was another pretty good match. It was very guardrail-centric, and depending on how you feel about that, I feel like it's going to determine whether or not you're pro or anti. I thought this was enjoyable.
This is the first match on the card that I was kind of like, meh. It wasn't anything exciting, especially for a Sandman match. It was more the entrance and the aura around Sandman that was like the good part to me. The match itself, I didn't love.
Emily, you just described the review of almost every Sandman match to ever
really?
Exist.
Oh no!
I need you to know that man is 90% entrance and aura.
He does that really well. Well, shit.
Yeah, Sandman's not known for being a great in-ring worker.
Oh, well, fuck.
He's not a Dean Malenko type, Emily.
I don't like Dean Malenko. Don't say that.
But yeah, I think they're doing a good job of making Rhino look like a fucking killer.
Did you? Of course you did. I'm just dumb. I didn't know that Rhino wasn't spelt with a Y.
It occasionally is.
It's not.
In TNA it is.
Okay, because I was like, I know I've seen this spelled R-H-Y-N-O. And I was like... In my head, maybe it was in like WCW or WWF or something, and they just changed it for legality, but no. And I was like, oh, maybe they even like typoed it. There's a big old I on his gear, so nope.
He flip-flops between them because I'm forgetting which one is WWF and which one is TNA. I think it's Y in WWE.
Okay.
So you're not crazy. Not, yeah,
I'm not crazy.
This is not a Mandela effect thing. He literally has used both.
I wrote it down so many times as R-H-Y, and then he comes out with the big-ass eye on his chest.
You know,
well,
you know what?
I'm wrong.
It is Y in WWE, because when he goes to TNA and has to change back to the eye, he has to modify his gear to like make the Y look like an eye.
Oh, Jesus. He didn't have any of his old gear?
That said, he's only like 25 here, I think they said.
Yeah, he's a baby.
Yeah, they're really putting him over strong. We get commentary checking in. Dawn Marie is still here. I'm like, what?
Yeah, she hasn't left. So she's not on commentary. She's with commentary.
Cyrus has her jump up and down as they make more sex jokes.
They are like almost funny. Commentary is almost, especially in this segment, it's almost humorous. And then it just goes too fucking long. Like
don't,
they stay on.
Don't you
on,
mean huge erection?
I do not. This commentary segment goes like 3 minutes. It's really long for no good reason. It's not like they're cleaning up the ring or anything. It's not like there's cake that they're trying to mop around.
Let's go to our second to last match. It is Rob Van Dam with Bill Alfonso versus the U.S. male, Scotty Anton. I already had a hard time taking Scotty Anton seriously, and calling him the U.S. male did not help.
Might as well just call him the Postal Service.
Well, they're doing a thing of he was part of the American males.
Oh, I know, but if you're going to call him the U.S. male, you might as well change it entirely.
Scotty Anton is 29 years old here.
Really?
He looks terrible.
Yes, he does.
That said, I looked to see what he looked like now. He looks fucking great now.
Really?
DDP, okay. DDP yoga, man.
Is he another product of DDP yoga?
Yeah, a little bit.
Nick, you gotta sign up.
He looks better because I looked, he's in his early 50s nowadays. I'm like, he looks great.
I mean, he looks kind of silly in this immediate picture that comes up. But yeah, he looks.
What's the one? Yeah, I mean...
It's a silly picture, but yeah, his body looks great.
And Emily, what's Scotty Anton's gimmick?
He's going to give you the clap.
It's no big balls.
I've got big balls. He's got big balls. She's got the clap. And commentary just goes wild with this with Dawn Marie.
Yeah.
Obviously.
That said, Jesus fucking Christ, Rob Van Dam is so over.
Yes. You know how I usually have a hard time with heel and face?
Yeah, not hard.
Not in this one.
Well... It's funny because I feel like the face cheats way more in this match than the heel does. Well, part of that is thanks to Bill Alfonso. The match starts and I hear the whistle and I'm like, fucking Christ. And then I see he's drinking a bottle of water. People in the crowd have whistles and I'm like, yes. Fuck.
Somehow the whistle did not bother me this go around. It bothered you more than it bothered me, which is saying so much.
I had headphones. I wonder if that's why.
Maybe.
That said, Bill Alfonso also does use the whistle throughout this. He's not alone.
Oh, no. Bill Alfonso is still terrible. It's just a little more tolerably terrible.
So match starts. Rob Van Dam hits a spin kick and a somersault splash. On the floor, RVD hits a moonsault press off the guardrail. Van Dam lays Anton on the guardrail, hits a corkscrew leg drop to a chair on Anton's head. It was funny watching that because I think Rob Van Dam had to do that move a little like off center. I think the guardrail was so close that he wouldn't have had room to do the jump.
Maybe, yeah.
Anton begs off in the ring, but eats a dropkick and is then press slammed and handspring splashed. He does that quick. Van Dam hits rolling hills and then a springboard moonsault combo. Anton is put on the top rope, but steals a chair from Bill Alfonso and throws it at Rob Van Dam.
He just chucks it. He just like yeets it.
Anton hits a big headshot chair shot to Rob Van Dam and then hits a bulldog from the apron with Van Dam hitting the guardrail, and he lands over the guardrail, like by design.
Mm-hmm.
It was an impressive move.
I think, is this where he bites his tongue too?
Yes, potentially.
So yeah, RVD like bites his tongue at some point during this, and he is just like starting to spew blood out of his mouth.
I would say spew.
There was a lot of blood coming out of his mouth.
He's not like actively like I spew. I'm thinking like Monty Python. They cut the arm off.
it's just a flesh wound.
Anton slowly works over Rob Van Dam, including an Oklahoma Stampede. Then hits a back superplex and makes Rob Van Dam do the clap.
Ugh.
Anton lays RVD across the top rope and drop kicks his head. Then sets up Van Dam in a tree of woe and wants to hit the injured leg with a chair. But Rob Van Dam manages to stay upside down and kick the chair into Anton's face.
Yeah, so cool.
Anton locks in a Boston Crab, which had some clap name I didn't bother going back for.
Everything has a clap-related name.
Bill Alfonso tries to interfere with the chair. Van Dam then hits his like step-over spinning heel kick and then does a running drop kick with the chair, which I'm realizing does not have a name, I don't think.
Running chair drop kick?
Well, like, no, it doesn't have like a Van Daminator. Or,
oh,
well. I think that the closest I've heard is OSW joke that's the Van Sarah Connor.
I don't get that one.
The Terminator. She's the woman in Terminator.
Oh, sure. Sure. I've seen the Terminator for sure. I definitely have seen it. I just don't remember it.
Yeah. I guess noting that, the whole build of this is he's going to hit the Van Terminator.
Correct. Yeah.
It doesn't really seem like a point of emphasis through most of this match.
No, not really. I mean, commentary is useless, and we know that. But, yeah, the in-ring work does not really, like, build up to any kind of big final move. Until it does, you know?
We get a split-legged moonsault, and then a very convoluted but cool spot of Bill Alfonso sits in the corner to, like, lean back upside down to hold a chair on Scotty Anton.
This was the most agile and spry I have ever seen Bill Alfonso be.
And to add to it, Rob Van Dam starts on the second rope and then like jumps into a rolling thunder, but like he has to land on the mat to like start that move first, so it was kind of silly.
I loved it though. It's so theatrical, like so unnecessary. There were so many pieces of that were so unnecessary, but so theatrical. What a showman.
Anton hits Rob Van Dam in the leg with a chair and then locks in the clapper, which is just a sharpshooter. Alfonso gets on the apron, so Anton breaks the clapper and puts Alfonso in it. We then get a Van Daminator to Anton, and then a 5-star frog splash, like 3/4 of the way across the ring.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's a little overshadowed, though, because right after that, we get the Van Terminator.
The much-anticipated new big move.
Yeah, so it is Shane McMahon will go on to do this. He has not done
Shane
it yet.
Shane McMahon does it. Okay. I was like, I know somebody who does this.
He calls it the Coast to Coast.
Yes.
And I think the difference is Rob Van Dam like springboards into this and Shane McMahon will go up to the top rope and do it.
Okay.
But it is a drop kick from one corner to an adjacent corner with a weapon over the person's face.
Yeah.
It's impressive as hell.
It is.
I mean, maybe they're lying, but ECW notes that their ring is 20 by 20.
Damn.
So I think WCW does the 18 by 18. Mm. Or like some places do a little smaller.
You would know better than I would. But I mean, it is impressive, and the crowd really does pop for it.
Yeah, I think knowing what the move was, I'm like, it's still very cool, but I'm like, not seeing it for the first time. I'm like, all right, still cool. It also seemed like he had some distance to spare.
Yeah, like he had a lot of power behind him.
Yeah. He was still doing that as late as like 2015.
Damn.
Yeah. That said, the Van Terminator gets Rob Van Dam the pin, and I did look like Scotty Anton does not do much else in ECW.
Yeah, he doesn't really strike me as a big deal, honestly.
Yeah, and very much you got brought in for like this feud, it feels like, and now that's over.
Now it's over.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Match-wise, though, this definitely felt like a Rob Van Dam showcase.
I mean, it was an impressive set of moves. Like, there was a lot of good work being done in this match, and it was entertaining as hell to watch, too, which it says a lot.
I will give a little bit of credit to him. Scott Anton did do some good, interesting things and held up his end of the bargain. I don't have a lot of love for the guy. I don't hate him. I just think very little of him.
Yeah, exactly. I nothing him.
But let's go to our main event with a little pit stop about 30 seconds in. It is Just Incredible with Francine versus Tommy Dreamer with Jazz and...
Who's that?
George.
It's Gorgeous George!
So she just happens to look gorgeous. She's not Gorgeous George. Legally distinct, Emily.
It's very pretty George! No, isn't she called, like, the secret weapon?
Well, that's just in terms of, like, the story. I mean, they flat out do call her George.
Oh, do they? Okay. Yeah. Well, throughout the match, they're calling her the
Dawn
secret
Marie
weapon.
Has a line, George looks gorgeous.
She sure does.
Fucking the heels she was in. The platform stripper heels.
Oh, I mean, yeah. She knows exactly who she is. But then there's Jazz, and we love Jazz.
We did get a video package for this. I watched with you, and I watched separately.
Yeah.
There was narration over the video package in my version to give you context.
Okay. There wasn't narration over the other ones, though, was there?
No.
Okay. Interesting. Weird.
So Gorgeous George brings out a ladder, and this is a Stairway to Hell match, which all that is a ladder, and there's some barbed wire hanging in the middle of the ring. Yeah. It's basically barbed wire on a pole.
That's what I was going to say. It's basically barbed wire on a pole.
Wanted to use a ladder for it.
Sure. But it's just like a bundle of barbed wire, too. It's not like a baseball bat wrapped in wire. It's just a bundle.
Yeah, it felt like a needless hat on a hat kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the bell rings and the two stare each other down. And then we kind of like can tell there's a distraction going on. Made a little more obvious by the ref going, stay in the stare down. Like,
but then, of course, Tommy's like, no, fuck that. And then he goes and gets to be part of it.
What happened in the crowd was... And this is where we have to take a little side journey here, talk about XPW. I'm so glad I kept a secret from you all these years. I know, you haven't been able to watch ECW Heatwave 2000, and you go, keep going. Dark Side of the Ring, I want to watch it. No, there's not a ton of coverage on this, because it's just frankly, like, it was like, oh, kind of cool, or kind of wild in the moment, and afterwards it was like, eh, nothing too crazy. Sure. So... XPW stands for Extreme Pro Wrestling.
Okay, I could have put that together.
They're not trying to rip off ECW, but they are very similar.
Are they like the West Coast version of ECW?
Yeah, I'd say they're like kind of in between an ECW and like a CZW.
Okay.
ECW has sued them for using Extreme in their name, and it's like, you're trying to rip us off, and it's like, there's a little bit of merit there, but it's, you know, you can't sue everybody who has Extreme in their name as a wrestling company. And about a week after ECW sues them about their name, they put Sabu on one of their shows.
Oh.
The problem with that is Sabu is questionably still under ECW contract.
Interesting.
And the way XPW got around this is they're like, well, he worked for free, so you can't sue us. So this has caused a whole rivalry between the two groups where there was going to be an FMW show that was going to have both them, and Paul Heyman's like, no, if they're there, we will not be there.
Hmm.
So there's some bad blood already. When tickets went on sale for this show, people in charge of XPW went and bought front row seats. However, they clearly fucked up where the seats were because they're on the side that the hard camera is not showing the whole show.
Yeah.
They're so, like, there the whole time. The camera. Yeah. So additionally, security was told anybody with an XPW shirt, like, you have to flip it inside out. I think it was Jasmine St. Clair and somebody else with security outside pointing out, like, they're with the group, they're with the group, they're with the group. So, like, it was a bit of high alert.
Okay.
Because basically, we don't want you to do anything that's going to distract from our show the whole fucking time.
And they didn't for most of the show.
Yes. So we get to the main event and they kind of go, well, shit, we kind of bought these tickets to show off our brand and now we can't.
Right.
There. Also, signs were being confiscated. There was one XPW sign you could see during the Sandman's entrance. But what happens here is one of the women of the group, and Jesus Christ, at one point, I was watching something and I heard the names of the wrestlers, and it's like Homeless Jim.
I have them actually in a list.
And like Mist or Christy Mist.
There's Rob Black, The Messiah, Kid Chaos, Supreme, Christy Mist, Homeless Jimmy, and Chris Kloss. Those are all the people that were in attendance.
Yes. So Christy Mist takes off her top to reveal a bikini top.
Okay.
This gets a bunch of attention from the crowd, obviously. And there was some dispute whether or not Francine got pushed or not.
It seemed like she got touched.
According to her in a shoot interview later, they didn't touch me at all.
Okay, because I thought, I was like trying to read her lips, like why she was pissed. I thought I heard like, oh, you grabbed my ass.
She is apparently pissed because she has a spot later in this match revolving a wardrobe malfunction, and it's kind of stealing her spotlight there.
Oh, Jesus.
You broke one of the rules of the beautiful people. You don't upstage me, so I'm going to challenge Angelina Love.
Okay.
So,
because I thought that that's what happened. I thought that somebody from one of these guys like grabbed Francine's ass, which pissed everybody off.
So that's where part of this comes in, is that the roster thinks something like that happened.
Okay.
Because at that point, they start trying to get noticed. One of the guys kind of like stands up, starts like throwing up like the X with his arms to like promote it. And security starts to try to escort them out. The locker room on the show like clears.
Yes.
And including a lot of people like not in like full costume.
Yeah.
Like
Roadkill. I saw like Big Sal was there.
Well, yeah, but it's Big Sal's costume. Like I'm saying Roadkill's there. He's not wearing his Amish gear.
Oh, no.
So the XPW guys are escorted out as Joey Styles just calls them like, oh, some drunk fans.
Yes.
From here, apparently this leads to a parking lot fight in which the XPW guys are like fully outnumbered.
Oh.
There's a couple different stories about like whether cops just watched it happen or there were like, because there were cops around. So maybe they thought it was part of the show or whatever. But apparently a bunch of the roster, including New Jack, goes out to fight off these guys.
You don't want New Jack part of this.
Yeah, because apparently they were going to stick around to like kind of flyer at the, like, once people were leaving. So the.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so they brawl, and one story is Paul Heyman was out there throwing hands.
Hell yeah. I hope he was.
But yeah, it just leads to a parking lot fight, and apparently in the next week, XPW was worried that ECW fans were going to come like hijack the show, but...
You're not that important, guys.
Yeah, I mean, like that's pretty much it. It was okay. These guys tried to get noticed, they did, and then got in a parking lot fight with some of the ECW roster.
Okay.
But like, no one got stabbed, nobody died.
Good.
Yeah.
God, that's the bar.
I think that's why this is mostly forgotten, is it's just like, it happened, and then whatever. So yeah, that distracts a little bit from the match, but Tommy Dreamer basically manages to get everybody back on board by just grabbing a mic going, EC fucking W.
We love Big Tommy Pop. Dreamer. We love Tommy Dreamer.
The two star pretty standard with chain wrestling and holds until a credible super kick. Tommy Dreamer hits a power slam and sends both men to the floor on a clothesline. They go into the crowd to brawl for a second and then like come right back. It's kind
of
weird.
So right before this, this is one of the lines on commentary that I did take note of because it's fucking stupid. So Dawn Marie is with the commentary team. She's talking about the match. And they're talking about like the relationship between Tommy Dreamer and Justin Credible, whatever. And Dawn Marie is like, well, I'm biased. Cyrus goes, you're bi?
I'm bi a lot of things, but lingo ain't one of them.
But then that sure just kind of, that dissolves because she's just like, well, I don't know what that means. Maybe I am if you explain it to me. I'm like, oh my God. And then they just stop talking about the match. Like, that's it. Yeah. They're done.
She also has a line about like, I don't know why anyone would want to be with Francine. And Joey's like, I can think of two reasons.
Yeah.
I'm married, not blind.
Fucking Cyrus.
Just Incredible starts bleeding during that brawl in the crowd. They then brawl up to commentary and Tommy Dreamer grabs a ladder to set up on like on top of merch tables.
Okay, so I did hear that right.
Brawl and like climbs the ladder to go up to Justin Credible. What good was going to happen here?
I think that Tommy Dreamer's plan was to like
superplex
him off of the ladder through the merch whatever. But what ends up happening is Justin just pushes the ladder.
Yeah, like Tommy Dreamer's kind of like disappears. I could not see how he took the bump, but he's back up like a second later. He's fine. Credible drops Dreamer on the guardrail, but then is whipped into the ladder at ringside. Dreamer's thrown face first into the ladder, into the corner of the ring. Dreamer slingshots Credible into the ladder and then finally goes to climb, like our only real climbing attempt so far.
Yeah, you would forget that this is a ladder match.
Francine low blows Dreamer, who falls back and just like lands on Francine. And
ugh.
Yeah,
The way that he landed, it didn't seem like she took all of his weight, thankfully.
He grabs the rope to like, oh, not all the way.
It doesn't look like she got like squished.
Something tells me that was not intentional because she has the next spot. And it's like, oh. because Jazz and George go after Francine, but swerve, George turns on Jazz.
Ugh. I will say that Joey Styles has a fantastic line, like a legitimately fantastic line during Jazz's whole like in-ring moment here, where he says, Jazz is not TNA unless TNA stands for talent and ability. Feminist Joey Styles.
Jazz counters a Francine Bronco Buster and then attacks George.
Was that a Bronco Buster?
She was apparently going to go for it, but I think she gets her foot up. So like,
not
oh.
The Bronco Buster.
Jazz then rips Francine's top clean off.
Titties.
Yes, she is wearing big X pasties. So
oh, sure.
No nips for you.
Bummer. Yeah. What?
Credible grabs Jazz and tombstones her, also called a That's Incredible.
Nice.
Dreamer hits a Tommy Hawk, but Credible kicks out. It's a TKO.
Why didn't that get me so good?
Dreamer then climbs the ladder, retrieves the barbed wire, and then puts some on the top rope and drops Credible crotch first into it.
I don't know that I've ever seen them do that with barbed wire before. I liked that a lot.
Credible tombstones Dreamer onto the pile of barbed wire, but Dreamer kicks out. Francine comes out. I guess I didn't... She's wearing a top. I didn't really know what top.
Oh, it was a Just Incredible t-shirt. Oh,
okay. She accidentally canes Credible, and Dreamer DTs him onto the pile of barbed wire, but Credible gets the shoulder up. Another That's Incredible onto the barbed wire gets Just Incredible the win, and Just Incredible celebrates as we go off the air fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And are like, all right, we got Anarchy Rules up next.
Bye.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very quick, weird ending. But honestly, not a bad match. I enjoyed it. Once the match, got going.
Yeah, I think... Another one that I'm like, yeah, if you had a little more time and actually done more things with the ladder, but a lot of the crowd brawling stuff, I'm like, eh.
That being said, did you count how many matches were on this card?
It was a decent handful.
It was a swift 8.
Yeah.
We don't, the matches that we've been watching in, WCW, that's an 11, 12 number card. We don't need that. 8 is perfect.
Thoughts on the show as a whole?
Shockingly entertaining. I was really expecting this to be a dud and hate my life after watching it. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I always glance at the star ratings, and I'm like, all right, kind of curious what it was. Minus the first match, everything else was in, the 2.5 to 3.5 star range, and I'm like, that's about right.
Okay, it's, yeah.
I found myself enjoying this, but I don't know that I'll, ever feel the need to go back to this show.
Probably not. But if it's, if the WWE channel on Peacock starts doing, ECW shows... If this was on, I'd watch it.
Yeah, they probably won't do it on that channel just because there's too much questionable stuff.
Yeah, they'd have to do a lot of censoring. But it's one of those, if it ended up being on somewhere, that bar that I go to by work, if they had it on the TV, I'd watch it.
I think I said to you that I'm like, yeah, it's probably a B-minus show, but we have a different grading curve now. So.
Oh my God, yeah.
It's the best pay-per-view we've watched in a while.
In a long while.
I mean, we both gave Slamboree best pay-per-view for the Bitsies, and I think this show is better. So.
Yes, significantly.
That's why the ECW shows don't count for that.
Because it would be a sweep.
Well, speaking of things that won't count for the Bitsies, but count for us, let's go to best bit, worst bit, and MVP. Emily, what is your best bit of the show?
This was hard because I thought that I had it right off the bat. I loved the intro segment. I thought that was so fun, so different, so goofy, stupid. I was like, this is going to be my best bit, no question. But I think I'm going to give it to the Steve Corino and Jerry Lynn match.
Okay.
I had a lot of fun with that. That was so fun and good. So yeah. ECW.
I think I said it last time. I'm sad Steve Corino didn't get to really do more. I know he goes to Ring of Honor, but that's that time is just a blind spot for me.
Yeah. What about you? What'd you give the best bit to?
I think I'm going to go with the 4-way dance.
That was my close second.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Look, I think we've seen almost that same match, but with Super Crazy subbed in for Psychosis. But
probably.
I almost wish there was another low card title, because just have them compete for that. Have a cruiserweight title or something.
Oh, I would love that. I would love an ECW cruiserweight.
Emily, what is your worst bit of the show?
I feel like we might have the same worst bit. It's easily the worst thing on this show. It's the commentary. The commentary team.
Yeah, they are very bad.
They're just vulgar. They're unhelpful. They are unnecessary. They add nothing and they take something away. So therefore, they are the worst.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with you. But what about your MVP, Emily? Who do you got?
This was hard.
Yeah.
Because nobody, ran the show, you know? There was nobody that was, a recurring character that really, stood out. But I guess I gave it to RVD.
Yeah, I'm going to do the same. Okay. After going through the matches, I'm like, he definitely elevated his match the most.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's a decent match. And it's because Rob Van Dam's in it.
Exactly. Exactly. And when you even said, like, it's a showcase of Rob Van Dam. It's not like, it's not like he took over the match. It's like he made that match better.
Yeah. I almost went to Jiri, but I'm like, I firmly believe that Psychosis and Little Guido could have had a great match.
Yeah, easily.
So I feel like the value there is Rob Van Dam.
Yeah.
The whole fucking show.
They can say the fuck word on this show.
But that's going to do it for ECW Heatwave 2000.
When do we come back to ECW?
Well, we're going
to
be doing Anarchy Rules. That'll be episode 133, so we got a little while.
Yeah, we got some time.
That said, up next is us returning the Nitro. Good old Booker T, Jeff Jarrett, and the gang.
Let's get back to where we belong.
But you can either catch up on WCW or listen to any of our previous ECW episodes at our back catalog, everywhere podcasts are found except for SoundCloud. You can follow us on social media at Butts in the Pod, pretty much everywhere besides Facebook, where we are the Butts in the Seats podcast. And as we mentioned earlier, patreon.com/buttsintheseats, $5 a month gets you a little over 20 bonus episodes, including upcoming WWE Evolution and then Conspiracy Theories with Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, we need a little bit more woman power in our lives, so we're going to dive into what the women's division in WWE had to offer while the men were in Saudi Arabia.
I also get to test if Emily's a hypocrite because there's a 30-minute women's match.
I don't think I'm a hypocrite. I think I'm going to hate it.
it's Becky and Charlotte, last woman standing.
Oh, I'm going to hate it. Last woman standing? Fuck you.
Apparently it's a very good match.
Come on. I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure it's too long.
Oh, that's over on the Patreon. Emily, any final closing thoughts?
I'm kind of sad to be going back to WCW. I was enjoying ECW. I don't want to do it. I need more escapism in my life. This feels more escapey than WCW does.
Hey, we still got like 2 years.
Here we go.
But hey, Russo's done a little earlier than I thought.
Hey, that's something.
But until we return to WCW, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts in the Seats podcast.
Goodbye.